And welcome to the Hack Your Mindset podcast with me, Jenny Witter-Leach, the Mindset Hacker. So wherever you are today and whatever it is you're doing while you're listening to this, settle in and enjoy the ride.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Flying Changes show. I am thrilled today to have with me Ali Surrey-Dane. Hi Ali.
Hello.
Ali, tell us a little bit about yourself and what brings you on to us today.
So I work with horses now, but I did come from a more of a corporate background. Horses have always been my passion, but I went to university and did a business and hospitality degree. And then I did start up a livery yard and start training and things, but then money side of it wasn't amazing when we bought our own place. So I did go in and into the corporate world, which to be honest, I hated. It was a kind of little bit of performance management, a lot of admin. And especially in the winter, I was in the dark from, you know, I was leaving the house in the dark and arriving back in the dark with no time to do my horses or anything. So I quit that. I decided to leave that. And I've since done all of my teaching qualifications. I now teach people of all levels, mainly in dressage now, but my background is eventing. I previously evented with my horse up to intermediate, and I think the old 2-star, I think it's now 3-star, and with the same horse, we're just hopefully about to go and do our first Grand Prix when we're allowed to out again. Now, you know, I run my own yard. We do a lot of rehab. We have a lot of competition liveries, but the main thing is that I try and look after both the horse and the rider on the yard. I don't just focus on the horse, I focus on the rider, which is probably why I've ended up trying to bring more of a focus, I suppose, onto the rider than the horse, because we're absolutely inundated with all kinds of things about horses all the time, but actually we neglect the side of it that the rider brings in.
Awesome. Okay, so that's fab, and I love this. And you're very similar background to me. corporate uni, corporate, need the money, and then go, hang on a minute, that's actually, I could flip this the other way around and still enjoy myself and have my horses, which I was working really hard to have, but actually don't need to do, because if I flip it the other way around, I could have both. Okay, so amazing, so fabulous, done that. Tell us more then about your why. Why do you feel it's so important then that we look at the rider and the horse and not just the horse? What's that about?
Well, I think it was about 7 years ago, 2014, I very quietly, and nobody knew about it, very quietly and very slowly had a little bit of a breakdown, but nobody knew about it. And I realised at the time is because I had kind of abandoned all of my core values. So not abandoned completely, that's too strong a word, but I certainly didn't have them at the forefront of my life. I'd lost all my creativity. And by this point, I'd come out of the corporate world, and I was trying so hard to compete and so hard to be competitive with my horse, and almost punishing myself for not working hard enough. My problem is that I don't know when to stop working. And my core values, which actually I've since identified, having done quite, I suppose in the olden days we'd call it navel gazing, but now I know the value of looking at what drives me and what I feel is important to me. So things like integrity. In 2013, 2014, I don't feel like I was true to them at all, for various reasons. I was surrounded by the wrong people. Myself too hard, and I wasn't looking after my diet. I think I lost, I know now that my ideal weight is probably about It's probably about 63 kilos, and I went down to 52 kilos, probably in the space of about, I don't know, 3 months, I think. And that was the only outward sign that something was a bit wrong with me. Even the people that I live with had no idea that I was struggling at all. So after that, it was a slow makeover of my life, but I'm now surrounded by some really, really good people that share those core values, I suppose. And even though I still, you know, horse people push themselves, we like, especially people within the equestrian industry, is we, for some reason, we have this, we glamorize not having a day off. Why? In what other industry do we glamorize not having a day off? Yes, we put our horses first, but even when you have kids, like your actual children, you have a day off from them. You send them off to school, or you send them off to the grandparents or whatever. Why don't we do that with horses? Why is it not the norm with horses? Why do we think that working 7 days a week, you know, 12 months of the year is a good thing? Why do we constantly talk about that like it's something to be really proud of? But unfortunately, I probably fell into that group. But since then, I have changed the way I think. It's been a really slow process, and put a lot more emphasis on how I manage my time, how I eat, and the fact that I actually have to look after myself, otherwise I'm going to burn out. And I still do every now and again, but the difference is now is I've got people around me, especially my partner, who can see when I'm just about to completely burn out. He calls my mum and says, right, you have to go down to your mum's for a few days. I'm cancelling all your lessons. And I've got a lovely lady who works for me as well. And she works with my partner to get my diary cleared because I fit too much in my diary. And I go and have a few days off, basically. But
yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Yeah, and what is it about? I see this all the time with riders. I mean, they eventually come to me for some mindset stuff and they're like really stuck, and maybe they've tried everything else and they get fed up with it. And it's like, okay, fine. You know, I'm used to being people that do it as a reactive, not a proactive, and that's fine. You know, that's okay. That's changing. But how many of us, and you know, be guilty of this one, wander around crippled or, you know, with problems in our bodies, or we're overweight, or we're underweight, or we haven't got the strength or the muscle or whatever it is that we need to be able to ride, but our horse has physio every 3 months, a massage every month, they have regular dentist appointments, we look at their nutrition to the nth degree. I even got a message this morning from a friend of mine going, how many scoops of this do you feed your horse? And I went, well, it's not just about that, it's about blah blah blah, you know, how much work is it, how much is, and then as I answered that, I thought, that you just gave them that answer, didn't you? But you know, like, we know this stuff, don't we, inside out. You know, we get their saddles checked, we get their bodies checked, we are so careful about how we look after and manage them, and we're walking around with, you know, like one leg half falling off, stressed to the nth degree because we're trying to juggle 8 million things at the same time. You know, no thought or pause whatsoever. And I love the fact that you say it used to be called navel gazing, because you're right, actually, this kind of concept of stopping, reflecting, going inwards, thinking about things, it did, didn't it? It was like, well, that's a waste of time, you don't need to do that. But now we know it's really key. So what's been your experience of other people being this way? Because I know you've experienced it and you wanted to drive it for yourself, obviously. But if it was just about you, there's no sort of, want of a better word, business out of it, is there? There's no reason why other people would come to you, or you'd be developing the centre you are, or anything like that. So what have you noticed in others that's driving you to help them?
Actually, really, really similar things to what I notice in myself. So I teach an awful lot of people now, and it's a whole range of people, but everybody has their struggles. That's something that I've really come to realize, is that everybody, every single person that I teach, every single person in this world has something going on that that might be affecting how they deal with their horse, how they ride, and just their day-to-day life. And a lot of the time, people want to come and ride their horse and have a good lesson, whether they're competitive or whether it's the I teach a lovely boy down the road who's got autism, but he's part of an education program. But he comes with to his lesson every week with something that he probably needs to talk about before he can then focus on his lesson for that week. And that's what I found with people coming for their lessons. And at first I was thinking when I was teaching them, I was thinking, yeah, that's fine, I can sit and listen to this. But actually it was quite a lot of the time, it was stuff that people could do something about. And I read a book called The Shed Method, which I don't know whether you're familiar with. It's by a lady called Sarah Milne Rowe. And The Shed Method, it's an acronym. So S stands for sleep, H is hydration, E is exercise, D is diet. And a lot of the time, those four things were really affecting were having a huge effect on the people who were coming for lessons. You know, they haven't slept well, or they felt lethargic, or that, you know, they weren't hydrated, they hadn't eaten in, you know, oh yes, I've had today is a banana, and I'm like, it's 5 o'clock in the evening, why haven't you eaten more? And sometimes people talk about it like they're kind of proud, and it's like, how, you're paying me for a lesson, you're expecting your horse to do its best for you, so why aren't you bringing your best self to the lesson if it's something that's so controllable? Like, I'm not saying that sleep is controllable, because that's something I have massive problems with, and I'll probably talk about that in a minute. But hydration, exercise and diet, that is totally controllable by the rider. And then obviously you have a whole other branch of self-care. And I put physiotherapy and just paying attention to your body in that bracket, the self-care bracket. And a lot of the time, the rider will come with, oh, I really struggle with sitting trot. Okay, well, why do you struggle with sitting trot? The horse has a bouncy trot. Well, you're not going to change that. So what can you do for your body to help you be able to sit to the trot? Do you have a sore back? Yes, I have a sore back. Well, why don't you go to a physio and have that seen? But your horse has physiotherapy every month. You don't hesitate to that, but you don't want to pay for yourself to go to physiotherapy. We've got to make this the norm, that instead of thinking that it's all about the horse, go and see a physiotherapist, go and have a mechanical horse lesson and see whether your weight distribution is even. There are so many controllable things that can make us better for our horses, but for some reason we just don't do them. We do everything for our horses, and we absolutely should. I agree that we should. Horse welfare has to be top of the list on our priorities, but so does rider welfare, and it's got to be normalised.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting as well, and certainly from my perspective as a mindset coach as well, is that if we were a cyclist, we couldn't blame it on the bike, yeah, because the bike is a static thing. Okay, yeah, there's elements of the bike that you can improve to make it lighter or more aerodynamic or more comfortable or whatever they need, that's fine. But there is only a certain amount of that could be the bike. The rest of it has got to be the athlete, and so much attention is put on that. You know, swimming, any tennis, golf, anything that is a single person sport in that respect, that everything's put on the athlete, isn't it? And yet in our sport, because we've got another sentient being in there, we can go, oh, well, you know, I'll make sure they're all right and I won't worry about me. But if you were in a figure skating partnership or a dance partnership or something like that, and you were aiming for the top, you wouldn't just look at one of the partners, would you? You wouldn't just look at one half of the equation and go, well, they can have all the support they need, but I'm going to just expect them to carry me through. And yet we do that with horses, don't we? We kind of go, oh, well, I'll do everything I can for them because I love them. But actually, you could be neglecting them. I'm going to say this now. You could be neglecting that horse by not looking after yourself properly.
Putting it, because as soon as you bring the N word in, neglect, you know, alarm bells ring. You know, there are so many obviously negative connotations to the word neglect, but a lot of the time riders are neglecting themselves. And it's not just, I teach a fair few professionals now, and I know how busy it is, and I believe me, I know. But if something really matters, you make time. You really do make time. But also the other thing that I find people do is they put so much pressure on themselves to do, you know, they see all these things on Facebook and on Instagram and think, oh, I should be doing that with my horse. But actually, you don't need to do that with your horse. You need to go and make time to do a yoga session or you know, just go and sit and read a book if you don't want, you know, do something for yourself, not just for your horse. Go and look after yourself. And that was a big thing for me learning. So it's something I really want to use the welfare centre, or I call it a welfare wellness centre, to promote is self-care. I mean, it's a huge umbrella of huge loads of things come under the self-care umbrella. But I don't sleep well at all. None of the women in my family sleep well at all. And I'd read the shed method that I mentioned earlier, and sleep is the first one. And so I was putting pressure on myself to sleep, which doesn't work. Like you just can't force yourself to sleep. So I was still, even when I wasn't sleeping well, I was still trying to make sure that I did the exercise and I did all my work, and you know, I was really disciplined in everything that I did. But if you've just had 2 hours sleep, it's physically impossible to be as productive as on a day when you've had 8 hours sleep. I mean, that would be a miracle for me. But I, you know, on the days when I slept probably 6 hours, I feel so much better. So I started it, thinking of it as diet, exercise and self-care. So even if I've had a really, really rubbish night's sleep, I might, instead of getting up and doing a yoga session in the morning, I'll get up and read a book, or, you know, do something that isn't quite as, I don't know, active or pressurized or whatever. I do something that I want to do and use that time for me, instead of feeling like I have to do something. And I think a lot of us equestrians get, we get so caught up in what we have to do, and most of it involves our horses and not us as people. And the important thing is that we've got to, we would never treat, you know, or nowadays we never treat horses as, you know, all the same. We treat every horse as an individual, and we've got to recognize that every person, every rider, every equestrian is an individual. And you know, you can't just put everybody in the same bracket and say, you know, or see someone in it on social media or Instagram and think they're doing that, so I should probably do that as well. Because a lot of it's not sustainable, and it's worse for you if you do put pressure on yourself to live up to other people's expectations and your expectation of what you think life should be like with horses, rather than just taking care of yourself. And I've made up my own little acronym, which is DESC, which is diet, exercise and self-care, that I've written down numerous times now for myself, and actually it does help, because I don't put the pressure on myself to sleep now, and I don't sit lie there stressing if I've only had 2 hours sleep and I'm thinking, oh my God, I've got a million things to do tomorrow. Actually, I can just sort out my diary. I'm very lucky to be in control of my diary. I do the things I have to do, but actually I don't do anything else.
Amazing. Okay, great. So what I love when I was listening to you talking there, I mean, so far, everything you've been talking about actually is controlling the controllables, always. So it's like, okay, you don't have to be everyone else. You don't have to do the same thing everyone else is doing. We've all got different lives, we've all got different things. Some of us are lucky enough, we're not lucky, we have designed our lives to be able to flex our diary or have complete control over what we're doing. Other people have got day jobs that contribute a lot more to that. Other people have got families and things that obviously come into that and a lot more. And what I'm hearing from you is, okay, yeah, that's fine, everyone's an individual, but what can you take some control over? What can you make a decision to do? what can you decide you want to change, and what can you do to make that happen? And you know, you don't, we're not going to boil the ocean, you're not going to suddenly, you know, have this amazing diet, exercise plan, self-care, all this stuff comes in like in a week, yep, done it, smashed it, good. Like you say, it takes a long time, doesn't it? You said it's taken you a long time on that journey. What are some of the learnings on that journey that have been real key pivotal moments for you that have been like the right, okay, I've got to listen to this, or a light bulb type moment?
Well, the first one was standing on the scales and seeing how much weight I'd lost. For some, I don't know why, for some reason, that's the first thing to go with me is the diet. So I think the most important thing is knowing yourself, and knowing your, if you do spiral like I do, and by the way, this is why you must never judge other people, is because you have no idea what is going on inside somebody else. And unfortunately, I've lost two friends in the last year to suicide, which is just horrendous. And on the outside, they're such outgoing, fun, bubbly people that seemingly have everything, but actually they're struggling so much inside. And I'm not saying that I've been anywhere close to that, but for even if the people that I was living with didn't know what was going on with me just before I lost all this weight and totally I did have a breakdown, then imagine someone that you see every day, just ask them how they are, and they might not want to talk about it. So that's another big side of what I believe in and what I want to promote with the wellness center. We could go down that, I'm not going to go down that road now, but my point is just, it's really individual. You've got to know what your, what the signs are of you when you're struggling. Because unless you know to recognize them, you don't know how to, you can't change them. You have to identify them first, and then you can change them. So if I'm being really good and strict with my, I've just been in hospital for something completely unrelated. I had some surgery, but I came out of hospital and I thought, right, I'm going to take serious control of my diet now, and eat as healthily as I can, which actually is really easy because I work from home. For me, this is really easy. I appreciate it's not as easy for other people. I took control of my diet. I'm basically just eating as many vegetables as I can. I'm reading a book called How to Have the Energy, and I can't remember who it's by. I have to research everything. I can't just, I literally have to, I'm like a sponge. I research as much as I can possibly, read as much as I can and watch as much as I can. So obviously I had to read about how to make my diet better. So I am eating as many vegetables as I can, lean meat, cottage cheese, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But equally, on the other hand, if I feel like having chocolate biscuits for lunch, then I just have a few chocolate biscuits for lunch, and I don't feel guilty about it. I don't punish myself and feel guilty about it, because that's the other thing. Why do we end up feeling guilty for taking time to, or you know, eating a few chocolate biscuits, when actually the majority of what we eat is good?
It's like the 80-20 rule, yes, that one, okay, though, isn't it? If 80% of what you're doing is great, you can have 20%. Perfectly okay. You know, it's when it's the other way around that it's not quite so ideal.
Yeah.
So yeah, okay. And I think, you know, what I'm hearing from you then is, like, you have to know what your struggles are and what to do about them. You need to spot your signs that perhaps you're headed down that route, or spot things that, you know, you go, oh, hang on. But the only way to know those is to have been through them. So often when we see successful people like yourself and what you're doing and what you're talking about, and people go, oh, well, you know, that's all very well for her. She's got it easy, hasn't she? But to get to that point, every single entrepreneur, every single successful person I've spoken to, every single one of these interviews, they've been through struggle, because they've had to learn from the struggle what to do about it. You don't learn what to do about it unless you're in the struggle. You don't go and get the books and research it unless you have a need to do that. So, you know, all these people that are out there saying, oh, you know, you do this and you do that, if they haven't been through that struggle, then they're just regurgitating someone else's, really, aren't they? And that's okay, you know, fine. But finding the people like yourself that you know this because you've lived it, and you're telling people this because you care and you're passionate and you don't want them to have to go through the struggle that you went through, what you're doing is shortcutting for them. You're saying, look, I went through this lots of times and I learned things that I don't want to have to learn again. I've learned those. I'm now implementing something. I'd rather you didn't have to again and again and again. You know you've got an issue now. Let's sort it now, because I can tell you I've been there. I've done that research. Mm-hmm. It was real. It worked. And I love that. I love that there's people, so many people out there going, I will help you shortcut this. Mm-hmm. Like, come to me, learn what it is you need to learn, because I've been there and I don't want everyone else having to go through it in that same way. Would you agree with that?
But that's why you have coaches. That's why you have riding instructors. That's why you go to a coach, so that they can pass on their knowledge to you. And it's not, they have that knowledge not because they've never struggled in their life before, but because they have struggled and they go, oh yeah, a horse that I rode 3 years ago had exactly the same problem as that, and we did this. You use their experience and their knowledge to deal with your horse. So that's what we've got to do with people as well now. And it's just changing people's mindset. And to, you know, people, the good thing about competitive equestrian especially is that they're so open to learning. Like, they have this thirst for knowledge. And all we've got to do is flip it on its head and say, okay, you've got this thirst for knowledge about horses. What about the other side of the partnership? Why aren't you, you know, craving for knowledge, as much knowledge, about how your body works and how you can work in conjunction with your horse? The professionals especially, I find, there's 4 or 5 professionals that I work with, and we go, you know, I go over to their yard and we do maybe 4 or 5, 6 sometimes horses in a row, and they'll do that without a break. You know, that's 45 minute sessions, boom, 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 boom. Their groom has it ready, it's already been on the walker, or they don't even do the warming, you know, the walking themselves. And then the groom gets on to cool down. That takes some serious fitness and energy, and they want to learn so much about how to make that particular horse better. Well, actually, there's a common thread most of the time through all. Okay, so one rider, none of the horses bend to the right. Why do you think that might be? Are you crooked? Yeah, probably. Do you go and see a physio? No. Do your horses have physio? Yes. Does the physio say the same thing every single time, that it's tight through its right, through the right side of its neck and its left lumbar on the diagonal? Yes. Well, why don't you go and see a physio? Why don't you go and get straightened out? Why don't you put a little bit more emphasis on what you can do for the partnership, rather than, you know, just trying to learn, learn as much as you like about horses, but just don't neglect the other side of the partnership.
So we're on that note. Tell us what it is, because you've got this really exciting development going on. So we've talked about your why, we've talked about what you're passionate about, and you could just have a yard, couldn't you? Like, you so easily could just have a yard, but oh no, you're doing more than that. Tell us what this fantastic vision is that you've got.
I wanted a play. Actually, it was born probably from a selfish point of view originally, because I was going to as much as I could. I was doing as much fitness as I could myself, whether it was going to the gym, or my other half was horrible, and I was getting ready for a charity race. He's an ex-jockey, and he made me cycle up the hill outside our house, which is, oh, it's so steep, on a bike without a saddle. So things like that. So I was doing my best to keep fit, but actually it is difficult when you're so pressed for time and you can't. I have this awful thing of I can't say no to people. I really struggle to say no to people. So in a point where actually I should be out going for a walk with the dogs, or you know, making time for myself, I was saying, yes, of course we can do it. We can squeeze in another lesson. So I thought it'd be really nice to be able to have a space here where I could have somebody come to me and on a dedicated day, then I'm committed, I have to do it then, or, you know, a dedicated time each day. And I want to do Pilates, I want to do yoga, I want to do more strength and conditioning work. And I thought, actually, the bungalow where we used to live, we're just lucky enough to have built a new house on the same property right behind the yard. And then the little bungalow that we used to live in has the perfect spaces to be able to run small, kind of intimate, not ideal with COVID, admittedly, but hopefully we'll be through that by the time we open. Small, intimate Pilates sessions, and the same space can be used for education. So we'll deck it out with tables and chairs, and we've got a nice big screen in there already, and everything that we need for education, but also provide yoga mats and all that kind of thing for when we've got, I've got so many good teachers, yoga instructors, Pilates instructors, and other people that I'm desperate to learn from, but trying to get to them at the moment is really, especially at the moment, is really difficult. So if they came here, I thought that would be brilliant, wouldn't it, for me? But then I started talking to all of my clients and they were saying, oh my God, that would be amazing if we could just come here and do a yoga or Pilates session, or do have an evening talk, you know, whether it's a sports psychology talk or a dietitian or something like that. The focus is always going to be on the rider. It's not the horse. My yard focuses on the horse, but this little wellness center is going to focus solely on the rider. And then I thought, actually, it would be really good if we could have a therapy room as well. So one of the old bedrooms is being converted into a therapy room. Obviously it's got temperature control. I've got a really good hydraulic therapy couch on order, and lighting control, all of that kind of thing, so that when physiotherapists who treat the horses come here, most of the time they treat the riders as well anyway. So if they could treat the horses and then the riders directly after, and maybe doing a little assessment in the arena to see how they sit and all that kind of thing, that surely that's going to be better for the rider, and it means that they don't have to travel anywhere else other than the yard to go and have their therapy session. And I'm a big believer, I try and be as open-minded as I can about different types of therapy as well. So if there's somebody who wants to come and try out different kind, you know, Reiki and all that kind of thing, I absolutely feel, you know, I'd love to have them here. I try not to you know, pigeonhole people I don't want to think of people as being airy-fairy. I want to encourage as many different kinds of therapies and different ways of dealing with people's struggles, I suppose, because, you know, Reiki works for some people, but it might not work for other people. And everyone is an individual. We've got to remember that everyone's an individual, like I said earlier. But if we just limit ourselves to, you know, oh no, we're only having physiotherapists here, actually, I think we're going to miss a whole load of equestrians that might not benefit from, you know, being pulled about by a physio. I'm not saying that physiotherapists pull you about. If you have a good one, then they do an amazing job. But some people benefit from more gentle therapies. And I want this place, I want the wellness center to be that. I want it to be all inclusive. I don't want to neglect anybody, I suppose. It's that N word again, the neglect. I don't want to neglect anyone and leave them out. So we're going to focus mostly on education and wellness in terms of diet and exercise, but also I want to promote the self-care and therapies as well, and make sure every rider is looking after themselves as best they can.
Wow, it's giving me goosebumps. That's so exciting. Isn't that just amazing that, you know, I am 100% on board with you there. It is, the word holistic people think it's waffly, but it's not. The word holistic means the whole picture. the whole picture, mind, body, emotions, spirit, you know, even if you want to go down that route, that, you know, like it's so important that all of this stuff is addressed in a way that works for that person. And when it does, and when it starts coming into alignment, that's when we feel the sense of flow and things get a bit easier and the path of this resistance starts to come in. And it's like, oh, I can breathe now, you know, because whatever modality they needed at that time was available for them to even just try. I mean, that's the lovely part of yours, is if you're holding this stuff, people go, oh, I've always been really interested in that. I'll pop along and I'll try it. And you never, you don't know unless you try, do you? You might find the most random therapy is the one that finally gets to the bit you've been trying to do for ages. Yes. You know? I mean, haven't we all found this? Our same instructor says the same thing again and again and again and again. And then we go to a new instructor for a clinic or something, or that someone goes, oh, come and have a lesson with me or something. And they say something, you come back and you go, oh, this amazing thing, and it sorted this, and your instructor goes, I've been telling you that for years and you haven't listened to it. And it's like, you just need it in a different way sometimes, don't you? And you know, that's the lovely thing about having the buffet available. You can try a little bit of stuff and see what works for you. And I think that sounds to me like what you're trying to deliver. It's just a space where people can work out what it is that works for them.
Yes, yeah, that's a really good way of looking at it, trying to get people to come in, experiment, I suppose, a little bit, and get to know themselves and get to know what works for them. And I suppose in a way that's kind of what we do with horses as well. You know, we won't settle just on one. How many different types of feed are there? We don't settle just on one type of feed. We do as much research as we can into which type of feed they need, and then we see whether they like it or not. And sometimes they don't like it. My horse won't eat anything other than the most expensive feeds at the moment, apparently. But we gave him the choice of however many different feeds before he settled on the one that he liked. And I think we need to do the same for ourselves, and don't feel guilty for being a little bit fussy about and saying, actually, that didn't work for me. Because what works for one person might not work for you. It might, you know, you know, some people might find that Pilates works really well for them, but other people find that yoga works really well, or going for a really good long run works better for them. It's all, I want people to be able to, yeah, do some experimenting, I suppose.
Give them the buffet.
That sounds really
okay. So we've talked a lot about you and what's inspired you on your journey and things. We haven't really kind of gotten so much into your, you know, your riding or any side of that, because actually that's not quite so relevant to this today. But you know, you have done, like you say, you've done a lot of things. But I want to know, who's inspired you along the way? Who've been the people that you have looked up to or been inspired by or gotten some great nugget of knowledge from as you've gone through your journey to get to where you are?
Oh, that's a good question. If you'd asked me 10 years ago, I would have told you, I would have reeled off probably the British eventing team or something like that, because I was so driven in my eventing. But actually now I feel like I'm a slightly more I feel like my mindset is a little bit broader than it was maybe 20 years ago. So now I think probably actually one of my biggest inspirations is my dad. He does things that he's in motor racing. My family aren't horsey. They're not remotely horsey. Dad's in motor racing. My sister's in Australia with him, also working in motor racing and absolutely killing it. So dad's defeated the odds so many times over the course of his life. And my sister as well is a huge inspiration, because she's breaking through in a really male dominated industry, and actually killing it. And she's doing a law degree as well, and she's, you know, she's on telly out there, she's doing a bit of broadcasting, and so yeah, my dad and my sister, but also my mum. My mum's a huge inspiration, mostly because, you know, whenever I, if I ever need to call her, then she, you know, she's always there to speak to me. And that's kind of how I want to be for the people that I really care about in my life as well. And I try and approach things like that, you know, with a lot of kindness and open-mindedness. And my mum's been a huge support. You know, while I was ill a couple of weeks ago, she came and lived here, and I was, and she really did look after me, and every single little craving or whim I had, she catered for, which was very good of her. But in terms of, you know, the broader people that inspire me, Adam Kemp has been a huge inspiration. For people who might not know, he's a dressage trainer coach, but also he's ridden internationally, Grand Prix dressage rider, and he's helped me a hell of a lot. So I think I first met him in 2014, just as I was recovering from you know, the weight loss and all of everything that was going on. And so he's literally seen me at my very lowest and sat there and listened and nodded and gone, yeah, okay, well, we can, now that you've got all of that off your shoulders, now we can train your horse. So yeah, he's helped a hell of a lot. And actually my other half now inspires me every day because he is the hardest working person in the world. He's an ex-jockey. He works really, really hard. And actually it's mostly for me, it's supporting me. I don't pay him you know, he empties the muck trailer for us, he does all the field maintenance, he looks after the fencing and all that kind of stuff. Anything goes wrong here, then he sorts it out. But so I think it's more immediate people now that inspire me to be, I sound a bit cheesy, but be the best version of me that I can be, rather than looking at people that are too far away to really see the real person. I'd like to think all those people that I've just listed, I know quite well, and I know all the sides to them, whereas the people that I used to look up to, yeah, you can look up to these people, you know. I found, you look up to, like, I love the blogs that Piggy French March is doing. She's really open and honest, I think, on them, and she comes across with integrity, and that's something I think is really important and you don't see very often on social media. But I try not to I suppose look too much into people who are constantly posting on social media. I try to pull my inspiration from people closer to home, I suppose.
Sorry, I hit the wrong button. I'm back. amazing. Yeah, and thank you. And even just in being so honest about that actually, you know, your inspiration doesn't have to be someone at the top of their game at that point in time. They can be someone closer to home. They can be someone who's working hard to try and get there. They can be someone who's overcoming challenges. You know, your inspiration, you know, so often I ask that question, someone says something like, oh, you know, Charlotte de Jardin or Michael Ewing or something, or, you know, and it's a bit like, okay, that's fine. Like, by all means, aspire to be them. But, you know, how many people are going to be them? What is it about them that inspires you? And that's the most important thing. And then when you start realizing what it is about someone that inspires you, you start realizing there's lots more people with that quality that actually are closer to you, and they're probably more influential. In fact, they are more influential. The closer they are to you, the more influential they are. Okay, so let's start wrapping this up with just a simple, easy question for you. Where do you see yourself in 10 years' time?
Hopefully still here. At Ridgeway View, and hopefully doing almost the same as I'm doing now. I have to say, probably in 10 years' time, I want to be going at a slightly slower pace, possibly, and having a little bit more control, I suppose, over how much I do, because I think I will have to slow down a little bit more. But I still want to be as mentally busy, but just probably not as physically as busy. You know, I've just, before 9 o'clock this morning, I'd already exercised 3, done a yoga session, and worked on my business plan. So maybe slow down a little bit, but I still want to be helping horses and riders. I love what I do. I absolutely adore working with horses and riders. I'd still like to be competing. I want to have bought that really, really, that one really nice horse for myself by then. Hopefully, if I could bring myself to spend a bit of money on a horse for once for myself. But pretty much doing the same as what I'm doing now. Is that a really boring answer?
No, I think that's gorgeous. No, absolutely. Because that's fine. If you love what you're doing, carry on doing it. Like, you don't have to change. And I absolutely love what you said there about I want to be mentally busy and still creating an impact, a ripple, but not necessarily having to do it all myself. And I think this is really key that so many people, and oh my word, I've been stuck in this one so often as well, that you can have a massive impact. And just by you talking on here, you're going to have an impact on lots of people thinking about something differently. But by doing something in a clever way, not necessarily having to do it all yourself. So you do not have to go and teach all those people to have that impact. You can go and have that impact by, you know, your center is going to do its thing. You've opened that space for other people to come in and influence others. It doesn't have to be you doing the doing. And I think in our industry, you know, because there is a lot of manual side to it a lot of the time, people think that they have to be the one doing the teaching, or be the one running the yard, or be the one doing the mucking out, or be the one doing the traveling, or whatever it is. They have to be doing it, but they don't. You can have an incredible impact, an incredible ripple effect with that one drop. In fact, that's what this actually is around my neck. This is a thing called a one drop. One drop. Yeah, it is actually a one drop that an incredible mentor of mine, she's created these to remind us all that we are one drop, and that if you can have one drop and the ripple effect that that has on others, that is more powerful and more impactful on the world than trying to do it all yourself. You're going to burn out. Been there, done that one, got the burnout t-shirt, no thank you very much, not doing that again, you know, and you're the same. And I think what I love about you is the fact you're so passionate, you're so driven, but at least you're beginning to realize now it doesn't have to be you can orchestrate it. You know, look at the leaders of massive incredible companies, incredible charities, incredible organizations that are out there. They're not on the ground doing it all the time. They might do occasionally because they want to be involved. They are leading others to create that impact. So how many people can you inspire just by even having watched this, you know, listening to this podcast, watching this now? How many people can you inspire to think about the other 50% of that partnership? There's your ripple. There's your effect. And you don't have to have been up and done 8 million things in the morning before you have that effect. You can just have that one drop by putting that message out there. And I really want to help you spread that message. I think it's so important. So I'm sure there'll be some collaborations and things to come.
It's great to talk about it as well, because it's been in my head for so long, and it's actually great to get it out.
Yeah, definitely. It's no good in your head. It needs to be out there. You're not going to create any impact in your own head. So one of the questions that's come up, and people are saying, wow, this is really exciting, I love this, well done, will you be doing retreat type breaks for people to come with their horse and enjoy all the benefits? I might have missed it, but no, you didn't miss it. Will you be doing that? Is that on the agenda?
It is. It will probably be the first one. I'm hoping will be towards the autumn. We need to make sure that the COVID restrictions and everything, for obvious reasons, are out of the way. But before that, we're going to be doing day camps, and I'm hoping that the first one will be in July, if all goes to plan, with a little bit of building and internal works on the bungalow. And I'm hoping that we can do, within those day camps, we can do maybe 2 ridden sessions in the day. One maybe focusing more on position and how the rider interacts with the horse. And then the second one, more of a horse focused one. So maybe pole work session or test riding or something like that. I haven't figured out the finer details of it yet. But within that, I would love to, within that day, I'd love for small groups of people, and it will only ever be probably anything up to 8 people in involved in one day. There won't be millions of people here. So maybe in groups of 2 to sit down and with someone like you, Jenny, and have a chat about everything that we've talked about today, basically, and being the best for our horses that we can possibly be, whether it's to do with mindset or diet or exercise, self-care. But I want that to become the norm for people. So you do your, you know, you do your position work, you do your work on the horse, you have fun with your horse. The whole thing has to be fun. But also I just want it to be normal that you treat the rider as well as you treat the horse, because quite often on these camps and things you have an equine dietitian coming in, or a farrier or a vet or whatever. Fabulous. I would never say that we don't need any of those things. The more we educate people about horse welfare, the better. However, we need to still include the rider in all of that, and that's what I hope to do in my camps. But we'll be doing like 2-day ones eventually, 2 or 3-day ones eventually. But at the moment, while we've got COVID and everything, we'd have to stick to the 1-day ones.
Oh, so exciting. And I know you're not the only one doing this, you know, but I love the fact that you are doing it. And, you know, we need people all around the country, all around the world, in fact, doing this kind of thing, really, don't we? Because, you know, we don't want to be travelling our horses for 8 or 9 hours to come to a day camp. We actually physically need people nearby us. So the concept of this centre is huge.
Yeah, hopefully.
Terrific. Cool. Well, thank you so, so much, Al. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And thank you for being so honest with us and telling us about your story and your hopes and vision for the future. How do people get a hold of you or get in touch if they want to know more, or they want to sign up to be on your mailing list for camps or anything like that? How do they get in touch?
So my business is called Hurston Dressage and Eventing. That's Hurston. Dressage and Eventing, and that's on Facebook. And the new the equestrian centre, I should have said this earlier, I'm rubbish at this. The new wellness centre, is the whole concept of it is going to be called the Conscious Equestrian. And a Facebook site for that will be launched fairly soon. I've got one of my lovely friends working on a logo for me at the moment. And we're still in that, we've just incorporated it as a limited company, so we're still very much in the early stages of it being developed. But if you keep an eye on the Hurston Dressage and Eventing page, my other business, we will obviously tell everybody as soon as the Facebook site is live for the Conscious Equestrian, and we'll start posting on there as soon as possible. I've got so many ideas and things.
I love the Conscious Equestrian. I think that's such a gorgeous name. It's so true, isn't it? It's about being conscious of your decisions and being conscious of the all the little bits that make the big difference. And oh my God, I love that. I gave you goosebumps. Conscious Equestrian. I think that's gorgeous. Thank you so much, Ali. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on board. I can't wait to see everything that's going to unfold in the future. Hopefully be a part of it as well. I'd love to support you with it. And yeah, so thank you so much, and I'm sure lots of people will be in touch soon. Take care, bye-bye.
Thank you, bye.
And I hope you enjoyed this podcast as much as I did. If you want to listen to more of them, then please do follow us in Apple, in Google, and on Podbean. Hack Your Mindset with Jenny is the name of this podcast, so please do subscribe, follow us, and we look forward to you listening into our next one. Bye, everyone. You know you're gonna rock this.